And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Voices from the Grid. I'm Michael, and I'm being joined by one of my co-hosts, as always, the Red Ranger, Sasha Kaplan.
The fabulous, the amazing, the incredibly sarcastic, who always fights with you on the ratings of the episodes, Sasha Kaplan.
Okay, first off, everyone fights me on the ratings of every episode, but nobody cares about that right now, because what we need to say right now is the episode that you're actually about to listen to was pre-recorded, and then we had to redo the intros and the outros for reasons. And so if this episode that you're listening to sounds a little disjointed as a result of that, we do apologize, but we had to record new intros and outros. And with that said, we hope you enjoy the episode. On today's episode, we're doing Gung Ho and Wheel of Misfortune. As I mentioned on the last episode of Brian Massey, one of the interesting things is that Gung Ho actually aired on television first. Then it was Life's a Masquerade. But because of how it streamed on Twitch or on Shout Factory or even on the DVDs, which we base it off the DVDs, and also I believe Netflix streams it that way too, it goes Life's a Masquerade, then Gung Ho.
Because sometimes TV studios air things out of order. It happens.
Yeah. So with that, and this note will come up again because, as I mentioned, when we do the ratings, you'll actually see a reason why as we move forward, starting with Life's a Masquerade. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is everyone's favorite segment. In my mind, it's the quick run through of Gung Ho, which we start at the juice bar and we see Tommy and Jason training for the Team Ninja Finals. And Tommy and Jason are having difficulties working as a team. Because, man, when you bring in that new guy, it's all about that chemistry building. Rita again with talk of the super putties. Then Tommy and Jason are still bickering back and forth amongst each other. And then Bulk and Skull introduce their ninja team, which you got to admire, Pimp Bulk. Like, that is so pimp-tacular. And then, of course, their new team has some skills and really good teamwork. And, of course, you can see the doubt on Jason and Tommy's face during that demo. Back at the palace, I guess, the Frankenmonster is still okay? Who was just brutally murdered and Life's a Masquerade? Sure. Let's go with that. Anyways, the Super Putties are finally made, and Kim and Trini face them and are no match for them, which in result, they call for help and Zordon calls in the others. They fight the new putties as best they can, but retreat back to Zordon. Zordon sends a message to Tommy, Zordon sends Tommy and Jason on a mission while the other four fight the super putties. The four fight and fight, but it's futile. Tommy and Jason are still bickering, but Zordon is glad they are doing this test. And holy cow, it's Titanus! We finally get to see Titanus. And then they both morph. Jason and Tommy come up with a plan, and Jason gives Tommy the power sword. And in return, Jason gets the dragon shield, which leads them to doing the ultimate teamwork. Meanwhile, the others are getting whooped, but Tommy and Jason to the rescue, and now the ninja team finals are underway as Tommy and Jason prepare for the contest. Oh, and Zordon informs the Rangers that Titanus is an ally. Okay, right before the contest starts. Hey, it's a great idea. Hey, I know you got this contest. But, oh, by the way, that big-ass monster titan
that was literally shooting at Jason and Tommy literally 5 seconds before this.
Yeah, that's an ally. Yeah, that's an ally. But anyways.
Thanks!
But anyways, contest going well for Jason in round one. Round two, Tommy cleans house. Jason handles the bow staff round, and then Tommy takes the cane battle. And then in the final round, Tommy and Jason own the team battle and win the tournament to close out Gung Ho.
To the complete shock and surprise of all viewers everywhere. Honestly, going back and watching these old original Power Ranger episodes is kind of tells me how old I am because I'm looking at them with my adult brain, but this one is very much what I remember from Power Rangers is like, you know, that lesson of the week, like the lesson this week, kids, is teamwork is our strongest weapon.
Yay.
But honestly, though, Zordon purposefully set this up. He literally could have had Alpha go teleport and get the thing. Which are, these
okay, we have accomplished many, many, many episodes ago that Zordon's a jerk.
Zordon is a jerk. I understand the point of this is that Zordon is the mentor and he's trying to, like, make them into a better version of who he is. And as we learn from mentor seasons later, he's okay compared to some others. But
compared to others who don't even have mentors.
No, I specifically mean other seasons that do have a mentor figure. But it's so funny. Also, can anybody confirm if Gung Ho is actually Chinese for Work Together?
Yeah, because that was the big thing that Trini told him. It was like, yeah, you guys need Gung Ho. You need teamwork. And it's like, yeah, actually, that's a great question. And you know what? As we bring up the
Google. But so the episode does kind of demonstrate this competitiveness that Jason and Tommy have. Jason and Tommy, we've seen them working together at this point a little bit, but there is a natural competitiveness because they're kind of on the same level in terms of combat, in terms of martial arts, in terms of skill, etc.
So
do you tell.
You ready for this? Googler.
Yes.
Per Wikipedia, now, Gung Ho is an English term rhyming with slung low with the current meaning of enthusiastic or overzealous. However, in Chinese, it means work together, work in harmony.
Okay.
So it actually does mean. So it does
for
mean
being
Chinese
accurate.
For yes.
But given some of the things that Power Rangers does to both characters and actors, it's important to check these things. So thank you for being accurate. So it's funny because one of the things that I like about this episode is that Zach and Billy are actually kind of keeping time and trying to train Tommy and Jason, but they keep competing against each other, keep changing things around to try to one-up each other. And it's a very low-key way. They kind of have to watch for it to see it. But let's also remember that their opponents are two ninjas that were allegedly trained by Bulk and Skull. And they put up some decent fighting. Like, it's not like putty level fighting or like super bad guy zealotry, but it was decent. It wasn't like a one kick and you're done kind of a situation. So that was actually interesting.
The demo overall was really impressive.
It really was. I thought it was going to be, so I don't remember this episode, but I think, because again, for those that remember the last time I was in Power Dorks, I watched the original saga in Russian. So things were probably aired out of order in terrible Russian dub, and I don't even remember. So I don't remember the saga. There's things I remember very vividly, and then things I don't. This is one of those. But
you know, every time you bring that up, I really kind of want to YouTube Power Rangers in Russian.
Go for it, brah. Go for it. But so the super putties are a brilliant idea on Rita's part or Finster's part, except they're never used again. We see a later upgrade of putties, I think, under Lord Zedd, but I think the super putties only show up one time.
No, they are used multiple times throughout the they are actually used throughout the series or the rest of the season. It's just that they're never referred to as such.
All right.
Because the key thing that you have to pay attention to is that for the putties, because when you look at these super putties, what is the key thing that you take away from them from a regular putty? The hands.
Oh, right.
Because
yeah.
The wrist, they have the ball on it. The right, wrist and the fist right, would be bigger. Right. You do see them throughout the season.
Yeah.
But they're mixed in with the regular putties, so it's just become send them with the putties.
It's yeah.
Or
okay.
Send in the putties. They're just referenced in that way. But they're still there.
Also, I find it really interesting that Zordon seems to kind of know everything, but also know nothing. Because he, like, as soon as he spots the putties, he's like, oh, these are super putties that you need to be aware of. Like, how do you know that? Like, yes, you can see that these are, like, did you have time to scan them and realize that they were different? Like, does the hand attachment automatically signal to Zordon that they're upgraded putties?
Yeah.
But yeah,
and so keep in mind that the main enemy in this episode are the super putties.
Yep.
But when
there is no Zord battle in this episode either.
There is not. But one of the key, and there's no Green Ranger battle. Because, I mean, technically you do see, yes, the Green Ranger, but he doesn't fight. but the other
thing. He just dodges things.
But the key thing is, though, is this, and I mentioned this. In Life's a Masquerade, the episode before, which we learn is actually the episode that technically should have gone before Gung Ho, they show the Franken monster in the cave with them making the super putties. He was killed in the previous episode in Life's a Masquerade. So obviously, they reused the scene and just redubbed the dialogue.
This is what happens when you're working through Sentai. So one of the things, and like, I have not rewatched this series probably ever. Looking back on like the 27 plus years of Power Rangers, the original is, everyone has a soft spot for it, but it's definitely not my favorite season. But one of the things I noticed looking back is that like you can tell which scenes are in the Sentai, which scenes are the like American footage.
Oh, definitely, and the fight scene. While they're waiting for Tommy and Jason to come back. That's like 100% Sentai footage.
And like you can very clearly see that like the Pink Ranger is a girl and the Yellow Ranger is a boy because that's how it was in the Sentai. So one of the things that I also noticed that I like playground fights. We've seen a couple of different playground fights over the years, but I like when Power Rangers utilize their environment in a fight to try to, you know, gain the upper hand. In this case, because Kimberly and Trini were fighting super putties, it was a lot harder. Like Trini gets hit with like the swinging wheel thingy. Like, I remember those playgrounds. Oh man. So that was interesting. The quest, quote unquote, that Zoda set them to was just like such a forced plot point because it's in an open like hilltop, and I just looked at it like, has that box been sitting there the entire time? Like, did you have these weapons the entire time? Like, really, Zordon?
Well, see, keep in mind, like, if you watch the Sentai, but if you watch the Sentai, the Rangers actually had to earn their weapons, like the power sword, the battle axe, the, you know, the bow, the dagger, the bow staff. They actually, it was like, I think a 2-3 episode arc in the Sentai where they actually had to earn it. And Zordon just go, here you go.
See, one of the things that I think later seasons do is like, there's constantly talk of like upgraded weapons and, you know, we've just developed this thing that we've been working on, or they have to go on a quest to get this special thing to fight the special monster.
And here's the thing. And then you also had the battleizer modes or the battle modes of the armors. And like technically a lot of people are like, oh, well, when Jason gets the dragon dagger and the dragon shield, that's actually not a power up.
No.
It's a transfer of powers.
Yeah.
To him. But then the other
The little chest touch, like, you take my shield.
Yeah,
except he calls it a shield. That's instead of like technically take my armor.
Technically, it is a shield. I mean, technically speaking, but because it is actually referred to as the dragon shield.
Still weird, but I get it.
But then the thing is, though, is that you actually don't see a proper battle mode or battleizer until in space. In space.
Really?
Yep. Ben and I were having a conversation about this. I think after recording one of our Awesomania episodes, and we were talking about it, and we were just looking it up, and like, yeah, in space is when you see the first battle mode battleizer outfit for a Ranger, because
that was the first one.
When we get to season 3 and the Mighty Morphin Rangers get their metallic armor.
It's glitter.
It's never considered as a power up or a battle mode or battleizer. It's just
glitter.
We're just fabulous.
Sparkles. They're like Edward Cullen.
Yes. So
very shiny in the sunlight. Okay. So I think there's a Power Ranger episodes of any given season can be put into different categories. There's character development episodes. There are, you know, upgraded weapons episodes. There are multi-parters that continue the story, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In the original, there is a category of, like, you have your filler episodes, obviously, but then you also have these, like, Lessons of the Week episodes, and this is definitely one of those. And of course, the new blasters were given because, you know,
I don't think we ever see those blasters ever again.
I don't think so either, but that's interesting. Yeah, I think that's all there is to say for this episode.
All right, so interesting thing. So, as people remember, Life's a Masquerade scored like a 5.6, if I remember right. On the IMDb rating. Out of 10. Yeah, everything's always out of 10 with IMDb. Gung Ho clocked in at 20 minutes and 1 second and got a 7.7 out of 10. It is regarded better, even though technically speaking, Gung Ho and Life and Masquerade is a two-part episode because it is a two-part arc. It just doesn't have like Green with Evil, like that type of arc, or the Green Candle, which we'll get to in a bit, or Doomsday, which is a two-parter, or like our next episode, Island of Illusion. So it's different where it's one of the rare times where two episodes actually arc each other. And then here's the thing, we understand now why Gung Ho was supposed to air after Life's a Masquerade. And it's because Life, and this could also be indicative of the reason why Life's a Masquerade gets a 5.5 after a 7.7 Gung Ho episode, because it was put out of order. Because Life's a Masquerade was establishing the potential creation of these super putties, and then Gung Ho is the actual creation and having to deal with the super putties.
Yeah,
which is why we see it in the streams, the DVDs of Life of Masquerade, then Gung Ho. So our next episode, which is Wheel of Misfortune. So ladies and gentlemen, it's once again that time, everyone's favorite segment in my mind. I get to do it twice in episodes now. This is great. Ladies and gentlemen, Wheel of Misfortune, which starts off at Angel Grove High. The Rangers are rehearsing a play. Bulk not doing so well, and Mr. Kaplan is not amused at all. Bulk then breaks the spinning wheel, which belongs to Kim's grandmother. Kim is just freaking out because, you know, she doesn't know how she's going to face her grandmother at this point, which then gets evil Rita plotting away. Then at the juice bar, Kim is upset about the spinning wheel, and since when has Tommy become Mr. Fix-It? Like, seriously. He fixes a float. Now he wants to try to fix the spinning wheel. Like, when did he become Mr. Fix-It? There are some dirty things in my mind now that just popped up that I'm not going to say because we are talking about a kid's show here. But everyone probably just got it in their mind too, just going, I think I know where he's going with this. Potentially. Sasha's just going, no. But anyways.
I have no idea, and I'm happy to live in ignorance.
But Goldar and the putties sneak in and steal it before Kim and Tommy even get there, to which then Kim and Tommy go looking for it after they realize that the spinning wheel is missing. Rita starts preparing the spinning wheel for monster transformation. Then, in possibly one of the best moments in Power Rangers history, Billy, Zach, Treaty, and Jason sit around Kim, mimicking her deflated posture, which gives her a little smile. Come on, if that doesn't melt your heart just a little bit, you're heartless. Or maybe you just don't care. But anyways, Tommy fights off some putties, but gets captured, and Zordon contacts Rangers and asks them to come to the command center. Zordon informs the Rangers about the spinning wheel and Tommy being captured and essentially tied to a tree. Rangers morph into action to take on Goldar and Scorpina. Oh, be still my heart. Scorpina. They get Zords involved, but Goldar throws a net on the T-Rex sword. Tommy eventually breaks his ropes and suckers the putties to escape capture. What happened to Zordon's voice? It just went a complete 180 of what his voice normally is. Anyways, Tommy morphs into action and summons the Dragonzord. The Megazord having difficulties with the spinners, so Dragonzord having problems with Scorpina and Goldar. Thus, we bring in the ultimate Megazord power with Titanus to save the day. This is also our first time seeing this since having Titanus introduced in the previous episode. Kim's still upset about the spinning wheel, but the spinning wheel is returned and all is okay. And it's even fixed. Tommy didn't have to play Mr. Fix-It. And then, of course, Bulk and Skull watching TV and annoyed with the Rangers being talked about on the news. And the play goes on and Kim showing that sass, girl. Just showing that sass. And Bulk splits his pants to end the episode of...
In front of the entire audience of said play.
Yep.
Shares his underwear.
Yep. But that so sass by all, Kim, girl. That sass by Kim.
Mm. Oh, honestly, she was so annoying in this episode. Oh, my Lord.
It's a Kim-centric episode, number one.
And obviously. Kim is an annoying character. So I gotta say, like, Kim's whole thing about the spinning wheel, like, girl, if this is your grandma's antique spinning wheel that is so gosh darn important, like, don't bring it to school for a play. They can build one out of cardboard. It's fine.
And especially don't let somebody, like, Bulk play with it.
Right? It's kind of, there's this really funny moment, though, in the beginning where they're rehearsing, and I guess Billy's the stage manager. That boy is just so versatile. He makes tech, he runs crew, like, go boy, go. But there's a moment where Rumpelstiltskin's supposed to, yeah, let's remember that the play they're putting on is not a high school play. It's like a five-year-old play. It's Rumpelstiltskin. And Kimberly is the princess, and Rumpelstiltskin is played by Bulk. And Bulk comes into the room, not in costume, because this is supposed to be a dress rehearsal, but in leather. And he's like, I'm just trying to bring this play into the 90s, sir. And then, of course, he plays with the spinning wheel. And as the spinning wheel spins, it knocks Mr. Kaplan's toupee off. No relation.
Isn't it ironic that your first episode post-Green with Evil involves Mr. Kaplan?
Hey, you assigned me the episode, so this is your fault.
Yeah, breaking the fourth wall, I actually assign out who goes on what episodes, so.
Anyway.
I didn't do that on purpose, by the way. I was just trying to figure things out.
Yeah, well, anyway, Kaplan is not why I am, he is not the reason I am Kaplan, so. Point being, though, like, Rita, this is something I've realized about Rita. The reason she actually cannot succeed is because she is determined to destroy the Power Rangers, because she thinks until she destroys the Power Rangers, she can't take over the world. The thing we learned from, here's the thing though, there is so much she can do that by the time Zordon gets a clue, she could have gotten away with. But she is very much a villain who is determined to destroy the Rangers first, and then they'll clear a path to, you know, and maybe she's right. But that takes a lot of effort and time. So she's putting more time into destroying the Rangers than she is into taking over the world.
Even better question. Why does she have to keep going after Angel Grove? Why can't she go after New York City? The Rangers aren't in New York City.
Canada!
No, leave the Canadians alone. Go after New York City.
No, Canada deserves it. They've had it too good for too long.
That's why I say leave Canada alone, says the guy who still hopes to go to Canada to play in a hockey tournament.
Well, so. I hate to tell you this, but I don't think Rita's going to be your biggest problem.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she decides that, first of all, she's like a creeper, okay? We've got some major stalker vibes here, because she's like spying on the Rangers while they're in school, like... she better not be peeking into any bedrooms. This is a kid's show. So she decides to use the spinning wheel as like a murder, like she enchants the spinning wheel. She could have gotten literally any other wheel from anywhere, maybe even gotten two, and just like did the whole spinning rims of death thing. Because the wheel itself is only in like the latter half of the episode for like 2-3 minutes of, not even a minute, maybe a minute. And it's just kind of there. But again, Zordon seems to know everything because Zordon is also creepily spying on the Rangers. And it's just like, I feel kind of bad for these Rangers. But one of the things that I actually didn't notice in the Russian dub as much, but is prevalent in the actual version, is Billy and the Technobabble and how it's being translated by Trini. And I would get frustrated like that as an actor, where all of your lines have to be translated by someone else. So Tommy is also, there's a moment where Tommy is tied up and Zordon is like, he knows how he can free himself. And I'm like, dude, seriously? Like, yes, we know he's tied by rope and he can get out, but like, are you for real here? But we know why Tommy is not in the play. He's actually the only Ranger not working theater. He's a terrible actor. He couldn't even fake dead very well. But it was funny watching Kimberly act in the beginning because, and this kind of shows you how far a character, an actor has come, in the sense that like Kimberly is like, her actress as she's playing Kim in the play is like ridiculously overacting. And I don't know if those were just the stage directions, but it was kind of funny. I really don't understand why a high school is putting on a production of Rumpelstiltskin, but we need a play we can do in 5 minutes. Let's see. The spinning wheel of youth was kind of cute, but again, it was like lasted 2 seconds. And then Rita is like, she's just like, oh no, I lost again. Like, yes, of course you lost. But it is something that Michael brought up in his little little segment that's only in his mind, that.
The favorite segment and everyone's favorite segment in my mind.
Yep. Is the fact that, where did it go? I just had it. No, see, you made me lose my train of thought now.
You did that to yourself. Don't blame it on me.
Shush. So, Power Rangers are on the news. And this is something that we will rarely see in Power Rangers as we get into the later years, is the fact that there's actual, like, acknowledgement from the city of Angel Grove that there are Power Rangers and they do save the world. So, let's recap. The media knows Rita exists because they mentioned her by name. They know the Power Rangers exist. Neither the army, nor the government, nor the National Guard, nor anybody else ever talks to the Rangers and be like, hey, can we help you in any way?
Until we get to the comic books.
We don't, well.
Yeah, the Boom Studio comic books. Yeah.
They're very good, but they are not canon at present here in 1993.
Yeah. But they are here in 2020.
So yeah, also this is the part that like it becomes obvious because Zordon tells the Rangers that Rita stole the spinning wheel of death here, and then they get back to school and it's magically returned and they're all like, how did that possibly happen? And Zordon has to explain that because Rita's spell was broken, it magically returned from the moment from which it was taken. Like, you needed an explanation here. It wasn't painfully obvious what happened. Oh, Power Rangers. Well, that's all I got for this one. Bulk and Skull are both, this is the beginning of Bulk and Skull's obsession with the Power Rangers that will last us for years. It's not the actual beginning, but This season is where it all started.
Well, obviously it's the season where it all started because it is the first season of the show, exactly. Period. But this is the episode that really generates their interest in the Rangers because...
Except it really doesn't, because I think it starts like the intrigue, but they were watching something else, and then the news report came on interrupting their program, and they got cranky.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, is that it's planting the seeds of what's to come eventually.
And I think it's safe to say that Bulk and Skull have an amazing saga that I cannot wait to get into.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
So with that, Wheel of Misfortune clocked in at 19 minutes and 31 seconds for a 5.5 out of 10 on the IMDb's. So, and with that, Sasha, where can the people find you on the social medias?
As always, geekgirl101.tumblr.com, at geekycaptain on Instagram, and of course, that place where I cry in a corner and complain endlessly about what writers are doing to my favorite characters, that's geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com.
All right, and you can find me on the Twitters at thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and of course, everything is on the website at txhdhockey.com, and for this show specifically, /VFTG, which is call letters for Voices from the Grid. So with that, Sasha, take us out.
There's only one thing left to say, and it is epic. May the Schwartz be with you.
And until our next episode, grab your morphers and may the power protect you.
Oh, yeah.